feeling fidgety, restless, or trouble sitting still. 20. Having difficulty remaining seated in situations where remaining seated is expected. 21. Running about or climbing excessively in situations in which it is inappropriate. 22. Having difficulty playing quietly. 23. Being always on the go or acting as if driven by a motor. 24. Talking excessively. 25. Blurting out answers before questions have been completed. 26. Having difficulty waiting. 27. Interrupting or intruding on others, like butting into conversations or games. 28. Behaving impulsively, saying or doing things without thinking first. 29. Worrying excessively or senselessly. 30. Getting upset when things do not go your way. 31. Getting upset when things are out of place. 32. Tending to be oppositional and argumentative. 33. Tending to have repetitive negative thoughts. 34. Tending toward compulsive behaviors, like things you feel you must do. 35. Intensely disliking change. 36. Tending to hold grudges. 37. Having trouble shifting attention from subject to subject. 38. Having trouble shifting behavior from task to task. 39. Having difficulties seeing options in situations. 40. Tending to hold on to our own opinion and not listen to others. 41. Tending to get locked into a course of action, whether or not it is good. 42. Needing to have things done a certain way or else becoming very upset. 43. Others complaining that you worry too much. 44. Tending to say no without first thinking about the question. 45. Tending to predict fear. 46. Experiencing frequent feelings of sadness. 47. Having feelings of moodiness. 48. Having feelings of negativity. 49. Having low energy. 50. Being irritable. 51. Having a decreased interest in other people. 52. Having a decreased interest in things that are usually fun or pleasurable. 53. Having feelings of hopelessness about the future. 54. Having feelings of helplessness or powerlessness. 55. Feeling dissatisfied or bored. 56. Feelings of excessive guilt. 57. Having suicidal feelings. 58. Having crying spells. 59. Having lowered interest in things usually considered fun. 60. Experiencing sleep changes, too much or too little. 61. Experiencing appetite changes, too much or too little. 62. Having chronic low self-esteem. 63. Having a negative sensitivity to smells or odors. 64. Frequently feeling nervous or anxious. 65. Experiencing panic attacks. 66. Experiencing symptoms of heightened muscle tension, such as headaches, sore muscles, hand tremors, etc. 67. Experiencing periods of a pounding heart, a rapid heart rate, or chest pain. 68. Experiencing periods of troubled breathing or feeling smothered. 69. Experiencing periods of dizziness, faintness, or feeling unsteady on your feet. 70. Feeling nausea or having an upset stomach. 71. Experiencing periods of sweating, hot flashes, or cold flashes. 72. Tending to predict the worst. 73. Having a fear of dying or doing something crazy. 74. Avoiding places for fear of having an anxiety attack. 75. Avoiding conflict. 76. excessively fearing being judged or scrutinized by others. 77. Having persistent phobias. 78. Having low motivation. 79. Having excessive motivation. 80. Experiencing tics, either motor or vocal. 81. Having poor handwriting. 82. Being quick to startle. 83. Having a tendency to freeze in anxiety-provoking situations. 84. Lacking confidence in our own abilities. 85. Feeling shy or timid. 86. Being easily embarrassed. 87. Being sensitive to criticism. 88. Biting fingernails or picking at skin. 89. Having a short fuse or experiencing periods of extreme irritability. 90. Having periods of rage with little provocation. 91. Often misinterpreting comments as negative when they are not. 92. Finding that own irritability tends to build, then explodes, then recedes, often being tired after a rage. 93. Having feelings of spaciness and/or confusion. 94. Experiencing periods of panic and/or fear for no specific reason. 95. Experiencing visual and/or auditory changes, such as seeing shadows or hearing muffled sounds. 96. Having frequent periods of déjà vu, that is, feelings of being somewhere you've never been. 97. Being sensitive or mildly paranoid. 98. Experiencing headaches or abdominal pain of uncertain origin. 99. Having a history of a head injury or having a family history of violence or explosiveness. 100. Having dark thoughts, ones that may involve suicidal or homicidal thoughts. 101. Experiencing periods of forgetfulness or memory problems. How did your brain score? So how's your brain working? Dr. Amen has highlighted 5 brain categories: prefrontal cortex, anterior cingulate gyrus, deep limbic system, basal ganglia, and the temporal lobes, to further explain the symptoms you may be experiencing. I've also included information from his Images of Human Behavior, a brain spect atlas, along with simple word pictures and phrases to help you remember how all this works. Think back to each question where you chose a 3 or a 4, frequently or very frequently. Count the total number of items with a 3 or a 4 only, and then write that number down beside each brain category. Prefrontal cortex, the boss of your brain, questions 1 through 28. If you answered 9 or more questions with a 3 or 4, you may have a problem with the prefrontal cortex. Questions 1 through 18 may show an attention deficit disorder, ADD. Questions 19 through 28 may show symptoms of hyperactivity, or ADHD. Anterior cingulate gyrus. This is the stick shift of your brain. Questions 29 through 45. If you answered 5 or more questions with a 3 or 4, you may have symptoms of worry, problems with obsessive thinking, cognitive inflexibility, eating disorders, or addictions. Deep limbic system. This is the deep freezer of your brain. Questions 46 to 63. If 5 or more symptoms are rated 3 or 4, you may be struggling with depression, negative thoughts about yourself or others, motivation, sleep, or weight issues. Basal ganglia. This is when your brain's pedal is to the metal. Questions 64 through 88. If 5 or more symptoms are rated 3 or 4, most likely you have high levels of anxiety and fear. Temporal lobes. This is the mood control center of your brain. Questions 89 through 101. If 5 or more symptoms are rated 3 or 4, there may be some problems with mood swings, memory problems, depression, or volatility. While this questionnaire doesn't take the place of a face-to-face visit with a trained clinician, based on what you discovered, you might want to share your results with a licensed professional to discuss what you're experiencing. How does the brain shake, rattle, and roll? The good news is the brain has the ability to change, and much has been written on how to help make it better. Let's take a look at how our brains generally work and how you might know if you need help. 1. The boss of your brain, prefrontal cortex. The prefrontal cortex is the front part of our brains where we make choices. Like a responsible boss, it supervises our minds, plans what we need to do, and gets us through difficult times. Imagine a graph that says the boss of your brain. It's the prefrontal cortex. On the left side is when it's working well. On the right side is when it's not working well. When it's working well, there's organization, emotions and impulse control, good judgment and insight, focus and follow through, empathy and the ability to express emotions. When it's not working well, there's disorganization and poor planning, impulsivity, acts before thinking. We have trouble learning from mistakes, easily distracted, unfinished work, and difficulty putting ourselves in others' shoes. Kevin's questionnaire revealed signs of ADD. Too little activity in his prefrontal cortex caused him to follow his impulses rather than make wise decisions. No wonder Kevin was struggling with pornography and involved in an affair. When the boss of our brains is working right, we can bring our best self forward. While Kevin is ultimately responsible for the choices he makes, when this part of his brain is not working well, it can grease the wheels of irresponsible behavior. 2. The stick shift of your brain, anterior cingulate gyrus. Let's face it, automobile transmissions can be tricky. Much like a stick shift in a 4-speed manual car, the anterior cingulate gyrus, or ACG, acts like the gear shifter of our brains. As a teen, I learned how to drive with a stick shift. Eventually, I got the hang of it and could shift gears with ease. I can still remember the day when my check engine light blinked red and my transmission got stuck at 10 miles per hour on the freeway. Now that's a problem. Like a car's stick shift stuck in first gear, the anterior cingulate gyrus can become overactivated. It creates havoc in people's lives through difficulties such as addictions to alcohol, drugs, sex, gambling, eating disorders, and obsessive-compulsive tendencies. Too much activity in the anterior cingulate gyrus causes the brain to become inflexible. With these brain types, no matter how much you try to negotiate or use the right words or tone, you're often met with defensiveness, opposition, or simply a stark no. People with an overactive anterior cingulate gyrus often struggle with worry and seeing imperfections in themselves and others. Because these brains are often good at connecting the dots, things need to make sense to them. Betrayal is counter-design and doesn't fit in any box. It's not supposed to. With these brain types, it can feel difficult to process grief, step into surrender, and let go of resentments or the need to have the last word. We can get stuck in our own minds or be mentally tortured by unresolved conflict. So imagine a graph that says the stick shift of your brain, the anterior cingulate gyrus. On the left-hand side is when it's working well. On the right-hand side is when it's not working well. When it's working well, the person demonstrates flexible thinking, sees options, creates orders and policies, keeps promises, sees positives in an imperfect world, cooperates and shares ideas, lives in the here and now, lives with unfinished business, and is able to forgive and let go when wronged, demonstrates a healthy mind and balanced lifestyle. When the anterior cingulate gyrus is not working well, the person values black and white thinking and is inflexible, struggles with delegation and controls, exhibits perfectionism, sees what's wrong, needs to be right and is oppositional, worries, fears, shows anxiety and catastrophizes, has difficulty dealing with injustice, grief, resentment, and forgiveness, deals with obsessions and compulsions, OCD, addictions to drugs, sex, food, and alcohol. Both Kevin and Crystal showed high scores for too much activity in their anterior cingulate gyrus. Crystal's racing mind was trauma-induced by the betrayal. Before she found out about Kevin's affair, Crystal's brain was generally calm, clear-minded, and able to rest. On the other hand, Kevin's past included childhood trauma. He was self-medicating with alcohol, marijuana, and pornography to try to calm his anxious racing mind. The split he felt inside after sexually acting out behind Crystal's back sunk him deeper into cycles of worry and shame. Both of their brains were in trouble and needed intervention and support. Number 3, the deep freezer of your brain, the deep limbic system. The limbic system, much like an oversized refrigerator, acts like a storage container or deep freeze for highly charged emotional memories. It's responsible for interpreting how we see and remember experiences in our mind's eye. When betrayal happens, this part of our brain does 3 basic things. 1, it tags events that are important. 2, it stores highly charged emotional memories. And 3, it labels the experience with a negative belief about ourselves, those nagging neggies, in order to protect us from future harm. While it seems odd that the brain would tag us with a negative label, it spares no expense to guarantee our safety. If we've been hurt, like an identity tag used to mark our luggage while traveling, the brain labels us with a stinky shame tag, otherwise known as stinkin' thinkin', so we don't let people get too close. Take a look at how your deep freezer looks when it's working well and when it's not. So imagine a graph, the deep freezer of your brain, the deep limbic system. On the left side are things that happens when it's working well. On the right side is when it's not working well. When it's working well, we have a healthy emotional tone of the mind. We have balanced perspective of self and others, pleasure, enjoyment, and optimism, a desire to be with others and connect, healthy appetite and sleep, stores emotionally charged memories, both good and bad. When it's not working well, we can be moody, irritable, and depressed, flood of negative emotions about self and others, lack of motivation, loss of joy and hope, withdrawn and disconnected, sleep and appetite difficulties, perceives events in a negative way, positive memories get buried under painful ones, dissociation. Cleaning out the fridge. Imagine a Tupperware container filled with leftovers and shelved in your refrigerator for several weeks. Your painful memories are stored in your brain fridge with some emotions and negative shame beliefs about yourself in light of the betrayal. Your beliefs might sound something like this. No matter what I do, I'm never enough for him. I'm invisible, unlovable, and don't matter. I'm not safe with any man. Just like leftovers in your refrigerator, the goo ferments and grows in shape, size, and smell. Eventually, the top burps off with a horrible stench. This stinkin' thinkin' causes poor self-esteem, anxiety, and depression, and eventually we pull away from others. We feel deflated before we even get up in the morning and often get trapped in a depressing, self-sabotaging, negative soup. None of us like to be in that bowl. Speaking kindly to ourselves does wonders to heal our brain. I am enough. I am significant and worthy of love. I do matter. I can choose whom is safe. Learning to tell ourselves the truth about who we are is like cleaning out the goopy mess in our mind one Tupperware container at a time. 4. When your brain's pedal is to the metal, basal ganglia. Remember the last time you watched an Indy 500 race? The basal ganglia are responsible for managing the brain's anxiety level and function much like gas pedals in a car. When your brain is working right, your anxiety level idles much like a purring engine. When your basal ganglia are working too hard and revved up like a race car, they can cause your brain to lose its grip on a slick track with symptoms like chronic anxiety, fear, panic, and fatigue muscles. Imagine your graph that says when your brain's pedal is to the metal, basal ganglia. On the left-hand side is when it's working well. On the right-hand side is when it's not working well. When it works well, it sets the body's idle or anxiety level, maintains a calm, restful state, adjusts and regulates motivation, too much or too little, controls how the body physically holds energy and releases tension, and is mindful in the moment, clear thinking, and able to respond, prepare, and cope with difficult situations. When it's not working well, we'll feel nervous energy, stressed, or irritation. Is fearful, unable to be still and calm and uneasy, has difficulty falling asleep and dealing with fatigue. Avoids conflict because you're too anxious to confront, or displays excessive motivation as if driven by a motor. Experiences physical sensations of anxiety, such as muscle tension, headaches, sweaty hands, heart palpitations, shortness of breath, panic attacks, or adrenal fatigue. Remains vigilant, on the alert, and scanning the environment for danger. We wait for the other shoe to drop, and we can predict the worst. Just like we're born into a family where our eyes, faces, and bodies look alike, our brains are genetically similar too. It's difficult to completely know whether we were born with a high level of anxiety or picked it up along the way. That's why it's important to establish a good history with someone who understands your brain. Putting on your oxygen mask first. Crystals increase anxiety made sense. Kevin's affair and pornography use were making her relationship unsafe. I feel like I'm walking in a minefield. I never know what's going to blow up. Lately, it's been me. Crystal's anxiety was based on a real threat. Crystal's word picture was chilling. Trauma, like an exploding landmine, fires up our brain. It can set us up for being triggered when our amygdala and hippocampi sense something isn't quite right. With sexual deception, spouses often don't know what's happening under their own 2 feet. The sheer agony of not knowing what's happening leaves many women living in a state of fear. Helping Crystal make choices about what boundaries she needed helped her get her feet on solid ground again. Her situation wasn't short-term. She developed ways to protect herself while sorting out what she wanted to do. One of the most difficult things a betrayed partner must do is make her brain health a priority. She's been traumatically impacted and needs to put her oxygen mask on first. While Crystal can't control Kevin's actions or his recovery path, she can learn how to take care of herself for her brain's sake. 5. Mood control central, the temporal lobes. Imagine for a moment control stations in the brain that are responsible for keeping your moods balanced, supporting your memory, and maintaining your sense of reality. These brain parts are nestled behind your eyes and underneath the temples. When these parts of the brain are working well, you have a much better chance of living peacefully. Check out what happens when they are not working well. Imagine a graph that says mood control central of your brain, temporal lobes. On the left-hand side is when it's working well. On the right-hand side is when it's not working well. When it's working well, you have the ability to manage day-to-day anger and frustration. The ability to set and adjust emotional stability and mood. Ability to recall memories, short and long term. Language, learning, and the ability to find words to express ourselves. Ability to read and accurately process facial expressions, social cues, tone of voice, and intentions. Ability to stay grounded in reality, what we see and what we hear. When it's not working well, we have a low frustration tolerance, temper flare-ups, and explosiveness. Rapid mood shifts, hopelessness, dark or violent thoughts turn inward or toward others, abuse, self-harm, and suicide. Memory difficulty. Difficulty finding words, reading, or using language to communicate. Misreading, facial expressions, wrong projection of intention onto other people, social fears. A loss of reality through visual and auditory distortions. Sensitivity to emotional slights and mild paranoia. Kevin struggled with anxiety and a racing mind. He regularly drank alcohol to relax and used marijuana at night to sleep. Little did he know that alcohol and marijuana were toxic to his brain. Yes, he felt calmer, but unbeknownst to him, this practice was killing the neuron connections needed for a healthy brain. The alcohol and marijuana were directly responsible for shutting down his temporal lobes, mood control central, and the prefrontal cortex, the boss of his brain. They made Kevin's brain worse. A compromised brain in these areas can feel like letting a stampeding bull out of a stall. Kevin's anger, moodiness, impulsivity, and infidelity created a catastrophe at home and the office. He also got trapped in a vicious cycle of working harder yet getting nowhere fast. His brain, her brain. As I watched Crystal and Kevin interact from week to week, I knew both of their brains were struggling, and for very different reasons. I referred them to Amen Clinics for a spec scan and added a wise psychiatrist to the team who could look at their history and brain scans to make some targeted suggestions. His brain, a recipe for disaster. Kevin returned with his report and brain spec images in hand. His clinical evaluation with his psychiatrist confirmed symptoms of bipolar disorder, attention deficit disorder, and toxicity due to the alcohol and marijuana use. He also referred out for a sleep study and was diagnosed with sleep apnea. Kevin seemed most disturbed when he saw how his prefrontal cortex, the boss of his brain, had low blood flow. The psychiatrist was honest and said, "I don't know if you're suffering from ADD or substance-induced toxicity to your brain from the alcohol and marijuana use." Then the doctor appealed to Kevin's good business sense. "Your brain is your greatest asset in keeping you successful." He encouraged Kevin to get into a 12-step recovery process to stop his drug, alcohol, and porn use, saying, "When it comes to fighting an addiction, it's important to give your brain what it needs to have its best chance of cooperating with your recovery. Change is possible, but only when you starve these destructive pathways and commit to repair by rewiring your brain." His path was clear. Without intervention, Kevin's manic depressive episodes could swing between highs and lows, making him more vulnerable to acting out. We now had a plan. Until that time, Kevin had a case of the triple U disease. undiagnosed, unmotivated, and unwilling to do anything about it. He finally saw the problem, got some help, and began making some headway in his sobriety. For the first time ever, Kevin was open to using psychotropic medications to regulate his bipolar disorder and manage his ADD. The picture was worth a thousand words as Kevin finally got serious about getting help for his brain. Her brain, the only diamond you don't want. Crystal's report and brain spect images reflected a much different picture. During her visit, the psychiatrist asked questions about depression, anxiety, and trauma. Her spect scan and history confirmed signs of what Dr. Amon calls a diamond plus pattern. It's common in brains with post-traumatic stress. The diamond plus pattern is a combination of overactivity in several of the mood centers, including the basal ganglia, cingulate gyrus, limbic systems, amygdala, hippocampi, and temporal lobes. If you draw a line connecting these brain parts together, you will see the outline of a diamond lit up from all four corners. Believe me when I say, it's the only diamond a girl doesn't want. What does it feel like? A hamster running round and round on a squeaky wheel. Our anxiety gas pedal is pushed to the metal. Our painful thoughts circle like a car stuck in first gear. We fight depression from our unwanted negative beliefs. Our moods and emotions vacillate all over the map. We get triggered as our memories are stored with an instant replay to warn us about what's happened. Sounds exhausting, right? Crystal was shocked when her psychiatrist asked if she had a history of emotional trauma, a head injury, or post-traumatic stress. Trauma? Not that I know of, she responded. My brother served in the Gulf War. How could this have happened to me? Within seconds, Crystal broke down. It's the affair. It's got to be the affair. I can't sleep. I've lost 20 pounds and my nerves are shot. It's been this way for months and I don't think I can do this much longer. Crystal's brain was in a chronic state of fight or flight. There isn't an on-off button in the brain to simply calm it with the flip of a switch. Crystal's brain needed help. She made a decision to start taking medication and supplements prescribed by her psychiatrist. With tears in her eyes, she said, "It's not fair. Why should I have to take medication for something Kevin did?" Crystal's not alone. Many women who've experienced betrayal trauma are grieved over why they should have to consider taking medication. I get it. I lived it. I had to be treated for anxiety and depression. Unlike other organs in our bodies, the brain gets a bad rap when it desperately needs help. You didn't choose what happened to you. Your brain doesn't know whether you've experienced betrayal or have fought in the Gulf War. It's trying to save itself and you. It's heartbreaking. Betrayal trauma is real. Whether you've experienced abuse in your past, physical, sexual, emotional, psychological, or are currently living in an ongoing stressful situation, your brain may be showing signs of distress. There are powerful tools available specifically designed for treating trauma and calming your brain and heart. In Chapter 18, we'll be looking at EMDR, brain state technologies, mindfulness, and other interventions that can help your brain heal. You can change your brain. The brain has the ability to change itself and heal. The idea of neuroplasticity comes from two root words, neuron, which refers to nerve or brain cells, and plastic, which means the ability to be molded, altered, or easily shaped. Even as recently as the 1930s, scientists believed the brain was a hardwired fixed machine. Little hope was given to people with depression, strokes, or brain traumas. Research now proves that people's brains can regenerate and build new connecting roadways with proper feeding, care, and stimulation. The great news is the brain, like plastic, can change. The bad news is the brain, like plastic, can change. Whether we like it or not, our brains change with everything we experience, whether it's good or bad. If we've grown up with childhood pain, drug use, unexpected accidents, or betrayal trauma, our brains can be impacted just because they're moldable. On the other end of the spectrum, there are so many things we can do to protect our brains and help them rest. Neuroplasticity is God's design for brain restoration, renewal, and repair. We can change our brains when we take nurturing steps to help make them better. Chapter 11, Your Bodyguard. I noticed Felicity at a conference as she walked into the room. Eyes to the ground, shoulders slumped, and arms nervously crisscrossed over her chest like a corset of pain. I couldn't tell if she was trying to keep her emotions in or people out. I knew her world wasn't safe because her body told me so. We decided to grab a coffee. I noticed her hands trembling as she held her mug. For the past 6 years, I felt stressed at home, she said. My husband looks at porn and doesn't want to have sex with me. 2 weeks ago, I found a package at our front door addressed to him. Something didn't feel quite right, so I opened it. It was lingerie. No name, no note. He swears he doesn't know who it's from, said it must be a postal error. There wasn't a return address or postage for that matter. We haven't talked about it since. Felicity was frozen. Her brain, body, and mind were shutting down. I asked Felicity how long she'd felt afraid. Most of my life, I've felt like a stranger looking in. My mom was depressed, and I had a rageaholic father who traveled a lot. As a little girl, I remember teaching myself not to cry, to be strong. When I discovered the lingerie at our front door, I didn't feel a thing. My head and heart don't seem to connect. I've been wondering if I'm just detached or cold-hearted. Trauma affects the whole person, and Felicity has been submerged in it for years. Judith Herman, MD, explains how ongoing trauma develops extraordinary coping resources in us, including tolerating the intolerable, fantasy, creative workarounds, body symptoms and memories, and forms of dissociation. The child trapped in an abusive relationship is faced with a formidable task of adaptation. She must find a way to preserve a sense of trust in people who are untrustworthy, safety in a situation that is unsafe, control in a situation that is terrifyingly unpredictable, and power in a situation of helplessness. Unable to care for or parent herself, she must compensate for the failure of adult care and protection with the only means at her disposal, an immature system of defenses. The abused child's safety strategy is her focus on the wants and emotional state of the abusive adult. It's her best shot at maintaining safety for herself. When Felicity was a child, her strategy for staying alive was to focus on the wants, needs, and emotional state of her raging father and depressed mother. It was her best shot at securing food, clothing, and a roof over her head. Felicity is now blaming herself for what her body has done to survive. Between her family history and her husband's ongoing porn use, Felicity is trauma squared, a T2, and has been invisible for decades. Her body's doing everything it can to get her attention. The sheer energy used to keep a lid on the chaos has put her nervous system into a deep freeze. Dr. Bessel van der Kolk is both compassionate and concerned about women like Felicity who are impacted by long-term trauma. He says, "We now know that their behaviors are not the result of moral failings or signs of a lack of willpower or bad character. They are caused by actual changes in the brain. Learned helplessness comes from being in a deep freeze. It's a symptom of chronic relationship distress and brain paralysis. When the pain of what we're living reaches a tipping point, our bodies begin to shout for help. Felicity has a case of alexithymia. It's a medical condition in which someone can't find the words to explain what they're feeling. Many trauma survivors are confused by this phenomenon because it feels like they have a glitch between their mind and their heart." When Felicity asked her husband about the lingerie, she couldn't express how she felt. Her brain was mush. Not being able to connect her body symptoms with her emotions puts her at great risk. Felicity, like so many other betrayed spouses, lives in a hotbed of chronic emotional pain. The impact of sexual betrayal is showing up in her body as anxiety, depression, forgetfulness, obsessive thoughts, difficulty sleeping, irritable bowel syndrome, alexithymia, and post-traumatic stress. How does this brain-body connection work? The brainstem that's got your back. A symphony of complex systems that give and sustain life. The brainstem, known as our primal brain, is online even before we're born. Think about what babies do. They breathe, eat, sleep, listen, wiggle their bodies, swallow, or cry. Throughout our lives, our brains are a busy place, telling our hearts to pump blood, telling our lungs to inflate with air, and giving us just the right amount of hormones. It's similar to the way masterful design engineers create products with both success and failure in mind. It's what they call a fail-safe system. Engineers put their heads together, think of the worst-case scenarios, and build a safety net into their product to keep it from hurting others. Our brains have a fail-safe system too. When horrible things happen, our brains do whatever they need to keep us alive. In Felicity's case, she's been chronically revved up by crisis for some time, and her brain's stress machinery is on overdrive. We're not designed to weather long-term calamity. When we feel powerless because things don't change, our brains overload and shut down. Desperate pleas where we ask our husbands to stop the porn, leave the other woman, or quit whatever sex acts are harming us, deplete our energy. This inability to stop what's harming us is at the root of most traumas. Felicity's brainstem is in a state of panic. It needs help from other governing brain systems in order to coordinate care. The Triune Council. The brain is divided into three governing powers, much like the executive, legislative, and judicial branches that oversee our nation. Because the brain is a triune council, each part is equally important and connected to one another with responsibilities, vulnerabilities, and power. These three systems work together through checks and balances to regulate the brain, body, and emotions. Let me introduce these systems to you. I call them UGG, the primal brain, Amy, the relational brain, and the CEO, the wise, thoughtful mind. UGG, am I safe? The primal brain, UGG, is the part of the brain that works with the body to protect and provide what we need to survive. When there's danger present, UGG uses our senses to move our bodies into immediate action at the speed of light. UGG manages the autonomic nervous system. When I think of autonomic, I think, automatic. It's the part of the body that keeps things like the heart, lungs, and digestion working without us having to think about it. UGG has the authority to overrule all other systems if UGG needs to save us. The limbic system, Amy, works as a highly relational system in our brains. She helps us relate to people in our world by using her skills, compassion, empathy, putting ourselves in someone else's shoes, self-awareness, emotional regulation, intuition, gut feeling, monitoring fears, and memory. Amy sounds the alarm if things aren't going well and often works closely with UGG to turn things around. If Amy ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Amy has a few main functions. To act as a relay station that uses our senses to guide emotions, the thalamus. She expresses emotions such as anger, fear, anxiety, and joy. Amy's cousin, Harmony, the hippocampi, holds a filing cabinet of new memories before shipping them off to long-term storage. She creates, codes, and connects certain sensations and emotions from people, places, and events. Have you ever been surprised when something you smelled reminded you of an earlier memory? Or felt sad around the anniversary date of a big loss? She tags these experiences as important and tirelessly sorts memories even while you sleep. Because Harmony remembers details, both good and bad, she and Amy have a hard time forgetting painful things that have happened. When Amy's hurt or afraid, she asks Harmony to pull up those files in a hurry. CEO, what choices can I make? The prefrontal cortex, CEO, acts like the boss of our brains. It's the wise, thoughtful, rational part of the brain that helps us consider what to do. The CEO is the largest stockholder, owning a whopping 30% of our brainscape. But when overruled by UGG and Amy, the CEO goes offline and things can get a little haywire. We make poor choices, avoid looking at consequences, and say things we regret. UGG, Amy, and the CEO are companions that journey together in the good times and the bad. Together, they send messages throughout the body on their road trip through the vagus nerve. The road trip to Vegas. How many times have you heard someone say, "I felt kicked in the gut. My heart is jumping out of my chest. I can feel the hair standing up on the back of my neck." The vagus nerve is a very long road or channel that carries messages from our brains throughout our bodies. It starts at the brainstem and runs throughout the throat, heart, lungs, chest, gut, and all the way through the large and small intestines. When we feel something in our hearts, it's relayed up to our brains and then back to our hearts like it was traveling on a high-speed phone line. The vagus nerve is the roadway of communication lines that tells our bodies and brains how we feel about people, places, and things in our world. It's why we pick up on subtle social cues like kind eyes, a warm smile, a raised eyebrow, or a suspicious glance. It also explains why we can instantly feel the threat in our bodies if a relationship feels unsafe. UGG, Amy, and the CEO do their best to manage stressful situations. How UGG, Amy, and the CEO get along. Amy and UGG are closely knit, and together they form the emotional brain. All is well until Amy and UGG get re-traumatized or triggered. UGG finds out that your husband has lied again. UGG and Amy immediately start sending messages down the vagus road. You have a lump in your throat, your heart starts pounding, and your body gets tense. UGG is off to the rescue while Amy fires up her senses and opens her filing cabinet to gauge the potential threat. When Amy and UGG are triggered, they are a force to be reckoned with. They don't ask for directions from the logical CEO. They do what they believe is best. Freak out. They jump in the car to take the message as quickly as possible down the road to Vegas. It's about survival. It makes perfect brain sense. Who wants to listen to a CEO's logic when they're whirling in pain? It's like hitting our thumb with a hammer and being asked to recite the alphabet backwards. Our brains don't work that way. We need to start by calming our bodies, UGG, first, which is known as bottom-up regulation. Like frightened children, a panicked Amy and UGG need our mindful and focused attention to calm them down. We can help them by literally pulling over to find a place to stop, catch our breath, and rest. Calling a friend, taking several deep breaths, or sitting with our feet firmly planted on the ground are ways we can work towards calming our bodies down so we can think again. We can help our brains get back online by asking the CEO to name three objects in the room and identify their colors. These exercises and others listed in Chapter 18 go a long way to help UGG calm the body down. When UGG is calmer, Amy can stop panicking and can ask the CEO to help sort out her thoughts and feelings. Post-traumatic stress makes it difficult for our brains and bodies to run smoothly, but they are set up to keep all systems functioning at their best. Your body's arousal thermostat. We count on our body-brain systems to work even when we're distressed, unconscious, or asleep. The autonomic nervous system works behind the scenes in the body, just like a thermostat regulates hot and cold temperatures in a home. It's divided into two systems that keep our bodies working well. One, accelerator, turns our nervous system up in case of an emergency. This is a sympathetic nervous system. Two, brakes, turns the nervous system down and calms our body down when we need to rest, eat, and digest our food. This is the parasympathetic nervous system. Funny thing how these two systems work. I experienced this firsthand while writing this chapter. True story. It was 5:45 in the morning when I was startled awake by men's voices in our living room. The house was completely dark. Rolling over in bed, I saw erratic strobes of light flashing up the staircase. A man roared, "Orange County Sheriff's Department, come down the stairs with your hands up." Adrenaline shot through my veins. Was I dreaming? I peered into the darkness for my husband, Kyle. My heart skipped a beat. I'm alone. He must already be downstairs. Another spotlight flashed up the staircase. My heart tightened. I grabbed my robe. Before leaving my bedroom, I instinctively turned and looked in the mirror. Oh my gosh, I can't go down looking like that. Are you kidding me? I am not sure if that was Amy or my CEO, but I did what any red-blooded woman would do. I ran a brush through my bedhead hair. A man's voice gruffly bellowed again. Walk down the stairs slowly with your hands up. I did exactly that. My mind was racing with each step as I wondered what might be going on. I'm a trauma therapist with vaults of possibilities in my head. Are there drugs in the house? Child porn or illegal contraband? What would bring three fully armed sheriffs in bulletproof vests to our home? I knew I hadn't done anything wrong. I panicked. Then who did? My mind immediately flashed. I envisioned my husband Kyle or stepson sitting handcuffed below. Rapid-fire images, horrible pictures raced through my mind. This can't be happening to me. What have they done? Two officers pointed guns at me until I sat down. Our front door was wide open. They probed. Whose bag is on the front porch? Bag? I felt my heart jump in my chest. A bomb! Who put a bomb at our front door? Kyle asked if he could see the bag. Guns still drawn, they motioned him to the door. "That's my bag," he said. I shrieked, "Your bag? Who tried to steal it?" The officers told us they suspected robbery. One of the officers walked the perimeter of our dining room floor. He pointed his gun at the chaotic mountain of disheveled papers, books, and mail on the table and floor. My purse was unzipped like a wide-mouthed frog by the front door. The officer said, "It looks like the downstairs has been ransacked." Kyle said, "Oh no, officer, this is normal. It's looked like this for months."
Did he just say that?
I felt my blood pressure come back online. Then I died a thousand deaths and tried to explain my pig trough in the center of our dining room. "Officer, I'm an author finishing a book. I'll send you a copy when I'm done."
"Seriously, that's the best I could do?"
Ah! Secretly, I was relieved when they asked to see the rest of the house. Ah, the sweet smell of adrenaline. My body was hyped for hours. Facts. Kyle had accidentally left his bag on the porch. The front door blew open in the middle of the night, setting off a silent alarm. The dining room was a disaster. It was a perfect storm, a potential burglary in progress. Reaction. My mind and body knew something was wrong. Ugh. It was my perception that ramped up my biology even further. Illegal activity, handcuffs, burglars, and bombs. My emotional brain, Ugg and Amy, got the best of me. I was triggered. Waking up to men yelling in my living room turned my sympathetic nervous system on. Ugg and Amy. We all live through situations like this when we're taken by surprise. But when we take ownership of the situation, recognize why it happened, and have a choice in the matter, CEO, the issue resolves. Being able to take action and deciding how to move through the traumatic experience are the keys. As far as my body knew, Ugg saved me. I came out on the other side, alive. In moments like this, we can take a deep breath and let the stress clear our bodies in a few hours or days. We may even have a battle story to tell. But when we're crushed by the chronic, unremitting pain caused by sexual betrayal, the stress is overwhelming. The endless streams of stress pumped into the sympathetic nervous system keep fight or flight turned on and put our bodies in an unending state of alarm. Here are some common signs to look for when your body's in a state of hyperarousal. Muscle tension, racing thoughts, rapid heart rate, anxiety, jitters, panic, emotional reactivity, inability to feel safe, poor sleep, insomnia, edginess, anger, rage, immune dysfunction, increased cortisol levels, irritable bowel syndrome, on guard, hypervigilant. When safety isn't possible and a prolonged threat leaves us chronically stressed, the body may eventually slow down, trying to conserve energy. Here are the symptoms to look for when you're in hypoarousal. Depression, weight gain, dissociation, foggy memory, low blood pressure, lack of energy, fatigue, numbing of emotions, can't defend yourself, learned helplessness, out of touch with your body, powerlessness, low motivation, decreased clarity, can't think, risk for ongoing abuse. Living with someone who is in some state of recovery from sex addiction exhausts our bodies. When we are stressed by what we don't know and aren't able to control the other person or escape the pain, we feel like our wheels are spinning in mud at full throttle. If we're not getting ample self-care, our accelerator can overheat and put the body engines into tilt, tilt, and stall.
The red lights on the body's dashboard flash and our parasympathetic nervous system tries to save us. When your body goes into shutdown,